You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The invasion of Parihaka to many New Zealanders is a piece of history lost in the mists of obscurity. The invasion and subsequent occupation of Māori land and peoples is not taught in mainstream schools and is therefore not known to many people. I spoke to Māta Wharioka, a wahine toa and strong advocate for the people of Parihaka, about the history of the community, the peaceful protests that encouraged the invasion, and the future of Parihaka and the lessons she hopes will be learned. Kia ora, welcome to our show. My first question is, do you think you could just give our listeners a very brief history of the Parihaka settlement?
Kia ora, maybe I'll go back a bit further because the Parihaka settlement wasn't seen as a settlement. It was seen as the reconciliation between the Crown and Parihaka. So that word settlement must never be used when we're talking about Parihaka and the money that's been put into Parihaka by the Crown. So that, with that over, one of the things that I do want to let the public know is that Parihaka's history started in 1865, and by 1867 there was a well-established community led by Tohu Kākehi and Tawhiti o Rongomai. These leaders were chiefs of Parihaka. Not only were they clever and strategists, they actually created a very large community at Parihaka. And we talk about 3,000 people at Parihaka on the day that the invasion took place on the 5th of November 1881. What I'm talking about is right from the beginning when all the land wars started, and we know that the first land war started in Taranaki in a place called Te Kōia, and it became knowledge, general knowledge to our people down the coast. And it was at that point in time that Te Whiti o Rongomai and Tohu Kākehi made that exerted effort to leave their coastal pā and move inland. And that was after much of there was a ship called Niger that bombarded the shores and used the shores of those coastlines to target practice. And what they did in that practice, they actually destroyed the wheat fields and the flour mill. And you know, those are basic kind of stable life supplements.
Food sources,
that,
yeah. People need them to survive, yeah.
Absolutely, and all destroyed. And so they left and they went to Parihaka, to keep the story short. And when they got to Parihaka in 1865, they developed that large community, 1867. And you'll remember that the story needs to be told about those of our whanaunga in South Taranaki, the Pakakohe people, who were taken away because they rebelled against the government in 1868. Parihaka men that were taken and imprisoned didn't go until 1878. One of the things that they were imprisoned for was for ploughing their own land that the government had taken and confiscated, stolen, to give to those soldiers, those settlers who came from overseas to support the government in their fight against Māori. So those soldiers, the militia, were given the opportunity to come because of the land. And of course, it's attractive, but what the government did do in that time was they actually stole it from our people.
And so is that the reason why the government invaded? Was it purely because, you know, they wanted the land, or did they see Parihaka and the community around there as a threat in some way?
Indeed, they saw it as a threat. And you will read history about how the government wanted to put the roads through from north to south along the coast, and that's what they did. So while they had our men incarcerated, they actually did these, these events that actually perturbed the leaders of Parihaka and the people of Parihaka. But that's what happened. But anyway, the invasion in 1881 was the beginning of a 19-year incarceration of our people for ploughing the land, for pulling out the survey pegs, and for cutting down the fences. So over that 19-year period, 600 men and boys were taken away to southern parts of our country, to Dunedin, to Hokitika, to Westport, see Tiwhiti and Tohu went to Nelson, and indeed to Wellington. So they were taken to long distances away from their families so that they could not rise up against the government when they invaded Parihaka. And when Te Whiti and Tohu were arrested on the 5th of November 1881, they were taken to the South Island. And when they were taken to the South Island, obviously the pressure was relieved and the government were able to do what they needed to do at Parihaka. And we learned that over the years those soldiers remained on Parihaka for many years, and it was during that time we know that the raping, the pillaging and of our village occurred. And we need to make history tell its truth and how important it is for us as people in Aotearoa to take on our own history. You know, I was taught about Bismarck when I was at school. I never heard of Te Whiti and Tohu. And when I lived in Dunedin, I lived next door to where they were taken from the prison and buried. And I didn't know that there was an existence of this behaviour by the government. I didn't know, and lots, thousands of people didn't know our history in New Zealand. So now we're out there telling our story about Parihaka. So we look at the things like we tell the story of communities, we tell the story of building strong communities, conflict, resolution, courage, resilience, all of those things that make a community work really well. So we believe too that we have this garden going at Parihaka. It's our symbol of how we need to be living as a community.
To touch on Te Whiti and Tohu, I find them particularly very interesting characters because of the way that they protested. It was peaceful. I was just hoping that you could just give us a little bit of insight as to what those peaceful protests involved.
Okay, you already mentioned about ploughing the land, pulling down the fences, cutting down the fences, and pulling out the survey pegs. And what we've termed this recently is active passive resistance. And this was the forerunner to Mahatma Gandhi as well, and he used it in India. What was so different about India and Parihaka was India had thousands of people to support them. We only had a small number of people, so it didn't become what India used it to do. And it's all said, I haven't found the quotation, and if anyone has it, happy to receive it, of where Gandhi was informed of the actions of Te Whiti and Tohu, because you know Gandhi went to England to do his training as a lawyer, and whilst he was there, he learned of the passive resistance movement in Aotearoa and Te Whiti and Tohu. That's what I believe is our tohu for the world, is that we started it here in Parihaka, that active passive resistance movement.
What was the the aftermath or the outcome of the invasion? What happened to the Parihaka community after in the years following? We've already sort of touched on that.
We need to clear that there was no blood shed on Parihaka. There was no murder. There was no killing. There was none of that occurred. So what really did happen was nothing. But the government still came and took our people away on that day, on the 5th of November, and imprisoned them, especially Tohu and Te Whiti. They were certainly taken on that day. I mean, history has it that Bryce rode up on his white charger, read the riot act to Te Whiti and Tohu. And what these men do, and I see this picture all the time in my mind when I tell the story of these men walking in peace and not resisting. And all the people in Parihaka were given to do that, don't resist any arrest. So how amazing is that?
Yeah,
how can we teach our children that same same courage to resist being angry about what's been done. So it's one of those things, and hopefully it will get into the curriculum, because you know there's a Pariaka bill in Parliament right at this moment, and its second reading will be soon. And no doubt when the Parihaka Act becomes what it will be, you will notice, I think, the change in the learning about Parihaka. It'll be in the curriculum. I'm feeling quite confident about that. What we do know is we have peace groups right through our Aotearoa who are already talking about supporting Parihaka, being part of their peace and conflict resolution process, using some of those teachings of Te Whiti and Pohu, not only in the schools, but in their homes as well.
Well,
how amazing is that?
That is amazing. I've got one final question. Yes. How are things now at the Papakanga?
In June of last year, on the 9th of June last year, we had the government, the Crown, come, and they made a public apology to the people of Pariaka, and something like 2,000 people came last year to listen to that very statement that came from Chris Finlayson, and what a wonderful process that was. But I must caution us as people, we can listen to the apology, and we can listen to what the offer is on the table for us, and what's happening at Parihaka right at the moment, I believe, is our people, our Papakāinga Trust, are working towards creating a stronger governing body trust, and they're also building their capacity to be able to manage the $9 million that's been given to them.
Worry Week on The Wire.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.